11.
And you're listening to Climb Talk on Radio 1190. My partner is Dave McAllister with Pump Factory Road. Dave, who do we have in the studio tonight?
We have, fresh from his journey back from Spain and the Zanskar region of India, Jason Kale, with special featured guests Pete Takeda and Abby Smith playing silent roles tonight.
Silent partners. Hello, everyone.
So you're bouldering at 13,000 feet in India in the Himalayas?
Yes, we took a bouldering expedition, basically doing the same thing that any mountaineer does, but we were just stopping and trying to find a location that had a ton of boulders in a valley and set up base camp and like establish the boulders there.
So tell us about the climbing.
I think it's a little early to talk about the climbing.
That's right.
Let's talk about the approach.
Okay.
How did we get there first?
Tell us about the trip.
Well, we initially had some ideas of where we wanted to go, but we went to Delhi, we flew into Delhi, and we got stuck in Delhi for 3 days waiting for our pallet, which had our crash pads and our tents. So we had, got held up for 3 days. Then we went to our first destination, which was an established climbing area, Chatru and Chotodara. And those were actually good climbing areas, but small, and there's a lot of people, like there was a small village right there. Not really what we were looking for. And then we went to what we thought was going to be our base camp, which was this area called Dali, and it's off the Shingola Trail. And we got out there, and there was actually no boulders to be found anywhere. I mean, like a couple small boulders here and there. And so our crew basically was like, well, you guys have one choice now to go one place, and we're going to drop you off there tomorrow. We're going to leave you on the bus, and the horses will come the following day. And pick something good, because we hope you're going to find boulders, because that's where you're going to stay. So we picked this area, the Miar Valley, which we had seen two photos online. We had seen that there's someone bouldering on a small, very small boulder, but you could see actually that there was a lot of big boulders in the background. And so we actually, they took us there, dropped us off, left. We stayed there one night, and the next morning we loaded up the horses, and we hiked 10 miles, was it? Out there.
Who is we, by the way? Like, who's the whole crew?
The crew is me, Abby Smith, Pete Takeda, and Mick Filari. And we had a crew of 13 horses to carry all of the gear out there. Four crash pads, huge marmot tents, like, all the cooking gear. We had, like, 120 eggs, was it? In a box on one of the horses. We had 5 live chickens in a styrofoam box on another horse. And basically, we hiked all day over these crazy rocky bridges and, you know, pretty treacherous terrain, especially for horses that have these huge packs on. But going to the destination, we didn't really see any boulders on the way. Hiking all day, we didn't see anything. And actually, we stopped, you know, to take a break, and the horses kept going. And they were supposed to stop, so we had to hike 3 more hours into the night. And we arrived at the base camp. It was super dark. We could see that there were boulders in the area, but we couldn't really get a grasp of where we were, what was going on. And we could just tell that there was rock. And the next morning we woke up, and like to our surprise, it was just like this gigantic boulder field. Granite boulders, orange color, black streaks. I mean, it took all day to hike up the hill to even like find our way, you know, through the maze of boulders. So it was pretty overwhelming just trying to get a grasp of where we were and trying to find the best lines and, you know, make the most of our time there. We had 34 days in this one location at base camp.
So I have a question about finding the lines. You're in a place where people presumably haven't bouldered much, at least, maybe at all.
Passing through, people have bouldered, yeah, because a lot of people go up this valley to a higher base camp to climb some of the mountain routes up there, and people definitely have stopped there and checked some stuff out. You know, we've seen the photos online, and we didn't really see too many signs of other climbers. But other than that, no, people weren't, like, staying there for any extended period of time. And, I mean, the boulder field was so vast that it was, like, you know, a lot of the stuff you'd see, you'd be like, wow, like, This wall up here looks amazing, and you get up there and it's like 40 foot tall, and then there's all these other boulders all around it. And so yeah, just like trying to get our bearings and basically choose the best lines that we saw that were climbable that we could do in the amount of time we had to send them and clean them. It was a lot of work cleaning sometimes too.
So what was that process like? Like, excuse me, looking for just the plumb lines. I mean, now when you're looking for first ascents in Colorado, sometimes you're taking down everything you can.
Yeah, and a lot of stuff has been climbed and all that. So it was really nice to go to a place that, you know, all of this was open. It had never been touched before. Basically, you're going around and picking and choosing. You're like, this looks beautiful to me. Like, some of the things I found, one of the things I found, I thought it was impossible. I first saw it, and I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing, but this is impossible, you know? And then a day later, I walked back, and I'm like, oh, maybe this is possible. And you know, like, back and forth between that and eventually trying stuff, and you're like, oh, wow, maybe we can do this, you know? You're, like, really surprising yourself as far as the lines that you want to climb and just getting on them and being like, okay, maybe this is possible. And it's kind of a risk to get into a really involved project, you know, like you don't want to work something for the entire trip and not send it.
Mm-hmm.
And you also want to do all the good lines too. So as far as, you know, the ratings, like if it's hard or if it's easy, it didn't really matter as long as it was the nicest looking thing that we could find and put up this beautiful climb, you know. And if it turned out to be like barely doable, then that's great. That's amazing. You know, that's what we're looking for. But
yeah.
the super tall, like fun lines, like they were everywhere, and that was like just really nice to be able to just do those first ascents and enjoy all that, the whole range of climbing.
Sounds awesome. So let's take a step back, or maybe set a foundation. What was, we kind of talked about this before you went on the show. Jason was a guest 2 months ago. And
he was also our first guest,
that's
too.
That's right.
Yeah, that is right.
Back on our first show
the
here.
The trifecta.
Rating 11.
2 years ago.
What was the inspiration and motivation, first of all, to kind of launch this odyssey? And second of all, how did it transmogrify along the way? Like, did your motivations change? It's a two-part question, I
guess.
Yeah,
well, originally it was, you know, to go to a place that people don't normally go for the type of climbing we're doing. To be out there, away from everything, and focus purely on the climbing. And I think, yeah, our motivation was up and down, you know? Like, the day we hiked all day to find no boulders, like, at the end of the day, we were like, you know, what should we do? Like, should we go back to the first area, which is established, because we know there's something to climb, or should we risk it and go somewhere new? So, like, the whole time, before we actually had made it to base camp, we had no clue that we were even going to find anything, you know? So that risk alone was, you know, pretty stressful, I think, for the whole crew, you know? It's like,
for sure.
And I remember hearing Mick say, like, Abby's dream was to find, you know, this beautiful green field with boulders in it next to a stream. And I remember listening to Mick, and Mick's like, she's crazy. Like, we're never going to find that. Like, you can't find that. Like, you're not going to just walk upon this and we're going to camp here for a month. That's impossible.
So how did you find it?
Well, after the last straw with not finding any boulders, we were hanging out at this camp, and we had talked to Mr. Shampshire. He was our local connection, and he had spoke of this area called Zardo, and he said it was the land of many boulders, and he said that there are house-sized boulders there. Like, that's what he told us that night. He was like, yeah, there's house-sized boulders here. And we were like,
bing.
Okay, take us there. And then he arranged all the horses. He arranged the stay. We stayed in the town of Shuto, which was the last little tiny village we were at. And there's nice pea farmers there. We hung out with the people that evening, and they were super welcoming, and we stayed in, like, the rooftop of their house. And he took us in and led us there, and he was right.
So how did you, obviously there are no locals at the area you were at, but how did you relate with the locals while you were in India? How was that experience for you?
I thought, yeah, it was great. I think the locals were very welcoming and very curious. It was also cool, too, because it was us four out there, but then we also had a cook and his assistant, Raju and Heman. He-Man, as I like to call him. But so these guys were hanging out with us. They're young guys, and we were taking them out bouldering. They were super psyched. We got them bouldering. They even did the first ascents of their own at some boulders that were in camp, you know. And it was just cool, you know, getting people psyched. I think a lot of people were curious. I know when some of the horsemen passed to take some Australians, was it, up to the higher base camp, they reported back to our cook that we were the group that was down low cleaning off the rocks because they had seen us with the wire brushes, like, rappelling off the boulders and cleaning them, and they're like, yeah, they're down there cleaning the rocks. And they're the tourists down there cleaning the rocks.
Even rocks need a good cleaning.
If you're listening to Jason Kale, Jason's talking about his recent trip in the Himalayas, bouldering at 13,000 feet. He's back here in Boulder on Climb Talk on Radio 1190. And with him is Pete Takata. Pete is an accomplished climber and alpinist and author. And Abby Hoffman, author, climber.
Abby Smith.
I'm sorry, Abby.
Abby Hoffman was like an old activist, right? steal this book?
Mistake. That'll be my last.
It was a good one. That was awesome.
I'm sorry, Abby. Abby Smith, climber, rider. Went with Jason Kale to Indian bouldering. How was your trip?
A dream come true.
So tell us about it. Tell us about the climbing. Tell us about, did you do any first ascents?
We did many first ascents.
Did you do many first ascents?
Yes, you did.
Yes, we did many first ascents. We had 34 days in base camp and hundreds of unclimbed boulders surrounding us. So we just basically cherry-picked the best-looking lines. And
yeah. And everyone was after their own thing, you know? Like, the boulders that Abby found, you know, that she was psyched on were a little different than, say, what Pete found. Like, Mick and Pete did this really cool hand crack. Super tall, really nice line. And that's something that, you know, me nor Abby is really interested in. So wow. Everyone was kind of like...
Well, Pete, tell us about that. Pete Takata, yeah, tell us.
Well, I love bouldering, but I have this certain attraction for the line of a crack. I like crack climbing. And so, yeah, we found this one really unique crack, and I cleaned it off, and Mick did the first ascent, and quite charmingly, we're in the Miar Valley, so he called it Miar's crack. So, yeah, it was good. Yeah, I mean, to encapsulate the climbing that I felt we did, it was high, hard, and wild. It was super cool. This was a probably 10th or 11th trip expedition I've done to Asia, and very unique, and I mean, it's right up there with the best experiences I've had in the big mountains.
And so we have everybody talking now, so my question is, what did each member of the crew bring to the expedition, do you think? Did everybody bring their own desires, their own projects, their own inspirations? Like, what did everybody bring to make it the best experience possible?
Yeah, definitely. Like, and we were all like kind of working on our own projects while we were there. And you know, we have a lot of stuff we're trying to do as far as, you know, producing material from the trip. So it's like, you know, Abby was focusing a lot on writing at both Abby and Pete, and I was doing a lot of video, and just as far as like Pete and Mick, you know, going out and checking out the mountains, it was like everyone was free to experience whatever they wanted, and everyone had like a full month to take advantage of it, you know, and use this stage that we were living in to like, you know, have the best experience. So yeah, everyone kind of did their own thing, but we all kind of worked together as a group and, you know, kind of kept the primary goal of bouldering and developing this area, you know, at the forefront.
Speaking of developing, okay, so when you go on an international trip, you touched on a little bit, you always have things that you walk away from and you're just like, I can't do them and I have to leave them. But as an international climber, you also don't want to go back to the same area because that means you're not going to a new area.
Yeah.
So you're always like, I can't go, but sometimes...
Yeah, you want to finish your business and
that was
move
my question.
On. Yeah.
Was that stuff good enough, or was that experience good enough? And is there enough unfinished business to go back?
Yeah, I think there is enough unfinished business for sure. And I think what we're trying to do is, you know, choose our goals wisely, you know, and realize that, hey, like, maybe this is possible or it isn't, and decide that early on before committing a lot of time to something. But there were definitely other lines that I saw, and there was a couple of other things that I had brushed off and just never had the time to try, you know. Just got interested in something else. But, yeah, I mean, we were super busy the whole time, and we sent all our projects, like, right before the end of the trip, and we kind of, you know, and we ended on a good note, and we actually had a day, like, to reflect on that, and it was nice, you know. It wasn't like we were down to the wire where we were like, oh God, if I don't do this tomorrow, we're leaving, you know. It was like, okay, like, we did what we wanted to do, like, yeah, there's definitely stuff out there, but, I mean, we're super content with the lines we put up, and we're, like, just psyched to be able to do what we did, you know, and leave that mark.
Wow. Perfect. Perfect climbing trip.
So you've been listening to Jason Kale, Crypto Child. Crypto Child no more, Jason. Your hair has grown out.
No, see, still Crypto Child.
I have a question about the hair.
I'm restarting.
Go ahead, Dave.
So, this is from the video on Facebook. When you're cutting your hair,
yes.
This is a quote. The hair of a one-year-old goat, three flowers of the region wrapped in bone, and one doll, which is an effigy of you, I presume.
Yes.
And you place that all on the dreads, and you start him a fire, walking away a new man.
Yes.
Talk about that exceptional experience. And that's the most dramatic haircutting video I've ever seen.
Yeah, and I kind of actually tricked myself into cutting my hair by making that video. Because I was like, you know, it's time for me to cut my hair.
Oh.
It was getting a little unruly. And, you know, I wanted it to be a memorable experience. And so I wanted to make something out of it. And I was like, yeah, I'll make a video out of this. And kind of thought about it the whole trip and kind of built the story while we were there, and did that on the last day. So the whole trip, yeah, and that was the end. I had the dreads the whole time, and at the end I cut them. But yeah, it was just kind of like, that was how I dealt with it, you know. I was like, okay, let's make a film and that'll ease the pain. Make some creation out of it for people to check out and just have, you know, just have a good time creating some cool film and some cool shots.
I want to hear more about the climbing. Tell us about the climbing. How hard, the names, how'd you name them?
How many problems, too?
Yes, we named some. Well, we named most of them, actually. How many problems was it by the end?
36
problems. Yeah, and granite, it was really, really featured granite. I don't know, it was like kind of a quartzite, but it was a mix of rock, you know? I don't know, it's hard to describe. Some of the best granite I've climbed on definitely had a little lichen on it, so it required some cleaning. So a lot of the days in the first like week, we were just like establishing warm-up circuits and stuff around camp, and then we were going out from there. A couple memorable lines for me. This one, you know, the first day we were there, we were like, oh, look at this boulder up on the hill, you know, and I think Pete's like, yeah, that looks good. And I'm like, that looks like a 5-story building. And I'm like, what about that little tiny boulder on top of it, you know? And then finally one day I hiked up there and it's like 18, 15 foot tall block sitting on top of this gigantic boulder in the middle of the boulder field with this fantastic view of the mountains in the background, you know? And it's like perched on the edge. So it kind of just, it's this beautiful orange arete, like kind of squeezing arete with like a hard low start. And just that was memorable alone because, you know, of the location and like just the beauty of it. The thing I was talking about earlier that I thought was impossible, it was this gigantic block formation It's probably like 20 foot tall, and it was like refrigerator size squeezing problem. And yeah, I first thought it was impossible because I didn't think I could span this gap because it was so wide. And you end up doing some moves where you like toe hook and let go with your hand, and your hands are on one side of the wall and your toes are on one side of the wall, and you work your way up and then you go back to the other side, and then you can like maneuver up this like huge block. But that was something that was for me cool because I was like, I don't think I can do this, and the top looks really hard and it's really high and whatever, and just trying it, you're like, oh, okay. And it took me several days to do it, but you know, it was definitely worth the experience.
Heck yeah. Talking about experience too, so on a big trip like this and an expedition, you're going to a beautiful place. Like, have you been to India before?
No, I haven't.
And Abby, no?
No.
Pete's been there 247 documented times. So what like lessons do you take away from a trip like this?
It's a big question. How nice it is to have electricity. We were running solar, and we were trying to charge the cameras, we were trying to charge the computers, trying to keep everything going. So it's just dealing with that type of life, and it's just nice to be in one place and to be able to focus on something. And, you know, we didn't have to worry about anything else, you know, there was no connection to the outside world. And I think that was just really comforting, and once you got into that rhythm, you know, it was really nice. And I think it, now being back, it's really hard to jump back out of that. And it's, you're like, wow, we were just in this really amazing place, and now we're back in the real world, and it's just like, we want to be back there still.
Does it change your perception though? Do you like when you're like, oh man, I really got to get to the computer and check it? Do you now think like?
I don't want to use the computer.
Good man, me too.
I turned my phone off for 3 months, and it was like the best feeling ever. And now it's back on, and I'm like, oh, I know I'm going to get addicted again.
Yeah, the shackles are back
on. Yeah, creeping its way back in.
So you're back, Jason. So what is next?
Next up, I am heading down to Waco Tanks. I'm stopping in Santa Fe. I'm doing a slideshow at the St. John's College. On the 6th, next Saturday, and I'll be down in Waco Tanks, and I am doing the guide certification training, so I'll be able to go out freely on the mountain, and I'll be able to take people out climbing. It's like a 3-day course. Abby's already certified.
Oh, really?
She did it last year, and it just totally opens up the park for you. It's like,
sweet.
It's amazing. You can go anywhere you want, and it's really good for developers too, who want to search out new lines, because it's kind of hard to go to the newer spots if you're with a group, and get away from that. Everyone wants to go to the same thing, so it's gonna be nice. It's gonna open up a lot of doors in Waco for me, I think.
Sweet. It's not very altruistic.
Yeah. After that, I have a slideshow lined up in Alaska.
Whereabouts?
Anchorage, the Alaska Rock Gym. I think that's also like the 4th of December. And then I have a slideshow in Hawaii on the 11th of December.
Holy cow.
Ooh, nice.
Skipping Kansas and Delaware and all that crap.
How did you set that up, Jason?
I have a friend who just opened up the first climbing gym in Hawaii. Friend Justin Ridgely, and it's called Volcanic Rock Gym. You can check it out on Facebook. And I've known him since way back from Maryland, and he opened up the gym. I'm psyched to go out there. There's actually a project out there waiting in Hawaii that I never thought would be possible. But I've seen photos of him. Super psyched to go out there and do that too. So
sick.
Go out there, shoot some video, do the slideshow, hang out with the people, sit on the beach.
Surf?
Maybe.
Where can people see video footage of your trip?
They can't see anything yet. They can see the hair cutting video on my Facebook page, or the Zanskar Odyssey Facebook page, or on the Crypto Child Vimeo page. I'm working on a 5-part series, and that won't be released until the end of this year.
And what about the men's journal piece?
Yeah, that's the men's journal stuff.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and there's no real rush on that right now, so we're just going to take the time and put the video together really nice. And
are you guys writing an article for Men's Journal as well?
Yes.
Pete is?
Pete is.
Yeah, I'm writing a piece for Men's Journal. It should be out towards the beginning of 2011, so January, February, March, something like that.
Right on.
Yeah.
Cool, look forward to that. And speaking of media, so we talked about kind of climbing as art last time.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think your experience in India will influence your art in any way or your whole design or anything like that?
Yeah, definitely. One of the first things I saw that reminded me of a climbing hold, we were driving down the road and there was this skinned out cow, super skinny on the side of the road, and its skin was like sucked in on its hips, and it just had these crazy, like, you know, like ribs where you could just see the bones like pressing through the skin, and I thought that would be a really nice climbing hold.
Nice. Look forward to that in 2011.
That was Jason Kale, Crypto Child, here on Radio 1190, Climb Talk. What else do you have, Dave?
Got some more. What do you think people will take away when they see the media? What will they take away from your experience? Like, why is this trip worth sharing?
I hope they take away, you know, just that whole sense of adventure. And, you know, yeah, sure, we can go bouldering up on Flagstaff, but it's that much more powerful when you take it to a special location like the Himalayas and, you know, greatest mountain range in the world. And just being out there alone, whether you're trekking or mountain climbing, it's like that itself is experience. And the color of the people, the cities, you know, the travel, I like to, you know, include a lot of that, and just kind of like our worries too at the beginning of the trip. You know, it's like, this is a risk. Like, you know, what is going to happen? Like, are we going to find anything? You know, like, Abby's dream sounds crazy. Like, how is that possible? You know, like, and then, you know, all that coming to fruition at the end, and you're like, oh, this is possible, and somehow we found it.
Boom. We still good to go, Mike?
So far.
All right, rock on. So, our last interview, I posted the interview on mountainproject.com.
Mm-hmm.
And
you got some flack for it.
Got some flack. So I'm going to let you respond right now.
I didn't hear about the flack.
All right, the flack, I did. It was, unfortunately, I read.
Yeah, you should read that.
Never
stuff.
Read responses to what you put online. But anyway, they gave you and Climb Talk for having you on flack for the ridiculousness of bouldering below the most famous mountain range in the world.
That's awesome.
Respond, Jason.
That's awesome. thank you for responding.
Well, you called him out.
I did call him out. I guess
what's the website called?
Mountainproject.com.
All you mountainproject.com listeners out there.
Thank you.
I mean, it's pretty crazy. I mean, what I was just saying, you know, it's like we're out there enjoying the mountains. And the cool thing is we're, you know, pushing the physical limit of climbing at that level, you know. It's not like we're hiking up some peak. You know, we're trying to push the bouldering physical movement. So we're mixing these two worlds of the mountaineering style and the bouldering style and just combining the two, which sounds to me perfect. Like,
I got to say something here. You know, I've gone to the Himalayas, you know, ten times or so. And, you know, I've seen the progression of climbing over the years. And writing about climbing, I've had the chance to, you know, really track the history. And, you know, when people first went to the mountains to climb something like K2, there was actually a person on one of those expeditions who saw fit to abandon this attempt on K2 and go bouldering. It's like a little-known fact. It's in the 1890s. And when people first started trying these big 8,000-meter peaks, people thought it was ridiculous and absurd and an undue risk, and it wasn't. It was just this preposterous thing to do in this mountain range when there were, quote-unquote, a lot better things to do. And if you look at the progression of technical climbing, whether it's, you know, free climbing, whether it's aid climbing on gigantic granite walls, whether it's doing technical hard, you know, ice and mixed problems, you know, there at the point where someone introduces that style into the greater range, there's always going to be people who think it's an absurdity. But when you look at it, climbing itself is an absurd activity, but in that, it's just as valid as any other thing that anyone else does. So, you know, I think this expedition is interesting for me to watch, you know, these young, just exceptional athletes doing their thing in like this beautiful venue and in the greatest mountain range in the world. And to me, it's not a question of legitimacy. It's just, I don't know, it's just what you do. Like, I just don't see the issue.
Neither do I.
I'd much rather be doing that than commenting on a message board.
Cheers. Hear, hear. And that ends that.
So do you have any more questions, or do you want to move on to our special guest, Roger Briggs, talking about the Boulder climbing community, new website, new group meeting, etc.?
Let's put a bookend on this with one more question for Jason. You just came back. So after India, you went to Spain.
Yes.
Can you talk about that a bit?
Sure. My good friend and mentor, Jordi Salas, I learned to climb with him growing up. He's from Spain. He lives out there near the town of Lleida. It's my sixth trip out there. I try to make it out there like every 2 years to visit him. Super great guy, and there's just amazing bouldering, like in a half an hour all around his house. And it's sandstone, very similar to the Joes Valley sandstone. And there's still lots of first ascents. We did a bunch of first ascents in that area when we were there this trip.
So that was more of a I need vacation. To decompress and
a little vacation. It was the slowly getting back to the real world. But no, it was amazing. Every time I go there, it's cool to climb with someone who's so psyched, and
for sure.
You know, it just everyone's energy gets turned up because of it.
Cool. All right, Mikey.
Okay, so
that'll do it.
Jason Kale and Pete Ducato and Abby Smith here on Radio 1190 Studio here on Climb Talk. Up next, Roger Briggs with the Boulder Climbing Community website, group meeting. He's going to talk about it. Jason, Pete, Abby, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, thanks.
Welcome
for
back.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks.
Jason was our first guest here on Radio 1190.
Thanks for noting that.
About
maybe our last.
Could be the last.
Hopefully not. Roger, we're ready for you. We're going to vacate the studio and bring him in. Thanks, guys. Seriously.
Yeah.
Take care. Happy Halloween. See ya. Thanks for listening out there, by the way, too. We appreciate it.
Man, that sounds like a dream trip to go to India and Boulder in the Himalayas.
And the interesting thing is, whenever you take a trip, you always leave unfinished business, and it's always a great experience, but you have a bit of sourness in your mouth when you leave those. It sounds like they didn't have that at all. Like, they wrapped it up, gift wrapped it, finished it, and they're back totally happy. It's a pretty good trip by any estimate.
Now in the Radio 1190 studio here at Climb Talk, we have Roger Briggs. Roger, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Dave.
Hello.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for stopping in.
So the BCC, what is that all about?
The Boulder Climbing Community. We're still trying to figure out what it's about, how it got started, why it got started. It's about 6 months old, and I've been climbing in Boulder for a long, long time, as you guys know. One of the things I noticed in the last few years, a couple things I noticed, first of all, that the climbing community got huge. There's no one knows how many climbers, thousands of climbers probably, but there was no kind of organization or communication network. If we ever needed to mobilize to give our opinion on trail closures or any of the kind of things that land managers might be doing, there was no way for them to get in touch. So there was no organization in the way that the mountain bikers, for example, have. I also noticed there were a lot of good things going on, different groups doing stewardship projects, trail building, the Flatirons Climbing Council, ACE, the Flagstaff Trash Bash, all these things, but they were all kind of fragmented and disconnected, and it just seemed to me that there needed to be something to kind of pull it all together. So I think that what evolved is really a kind of glue. It's not a club, it's not an organization, it's not a committee. It's something that's intended to be very inclusive, very collaborative, to work on win-wins, to look for ways to connect people. But the first thing we did was to start an email list. So I just spent months, I still do this, I go around and collect emails from climbers and say, do you want to get on our communications network? So we've grown that to about 400 or so now, and my goal is to get that up to at least 1,000. And we just send out information periodically on events and things that are going on, opportunities. It's not commercial. It's not for advertising. It's a confidential email list. So that was the first thing. And I'll tell people how to get on that if you're not on that. I think that's the most important thing, is to try to get everybody on that list. The next idea was that, you know, we have all these great electronic ways of communicating now, websites, Facebook, email lists, and that's all very effective and everything. But we had a sense that we wanted some kind of face-to-face gatherings as well. We wanted some kind of, like, almost like a tribal gathering of the masses.
That's a good idea.
So one of the things we added was that every few months we were going to try to have an event at some place. And so I went around and I talked to Neptunes and the Spot and the Rock Club and the Movement, and they were all just super excited. And one of the things that really kept me going on this early on is everyone I talked to said, this is so great. You know, this is something that we really need. I'm so glad you're doing this. And so that really spurred me on. But they were all very eager to host these events. So we had our first one in July at Neptunes. And then we had another one in October at the Spot. And the next one's going to be in February sometime at the Rock Club. And then we'll wrap up the year at the Movement. And they're all excited about hosting the event and putting different things together. And part of the idea of the event is to have it be a lot of entertainment, sort of a celebration of our sport, kind of social, where people can come together. We've had Avery Beer always there supplying beer. And all of this, I might add, has been free. It hasn't been about money at all, just human energy. Community really is the idea, and it really has happened. But we have some entertainment, and then part of the idea was also to have some information about what's going on, what is the work, what is the activism that's going on in the community. And so to have some information, some people getting up and telling about their various projects and the various opportunities, and to really kind of try to spread the philosophy of stewardship, that, you know, we all love the rocks, we love the mountains, we love to climb, we love our projects, but we also need to take care of the mountains and the rocks. You know, we can't expect governments and, you know, other people to do all these things. So we really, I think one of the most important things we want to do is instill an ethic of stewardship, so that all these rocks are here in 100 years or 1,000 years and they look pretty much the same. So that's a bit of a summary.
That's so important. I mean, and refreshing to hear, bringing about a community. Oftentimes you hear about these splintered groups, which is something I think about, how boulderers stay with boulderers and alpinists stay with alpinists, and trad climbers kind of stay in their trad climber cliques. Have you seen in the events that you've held that the BCC is bringing together climbing as a full community? Or is it, I see that fragmentation a little bit.
Yeah, it really is there a lot. We have all these different kinds of climbers. We have different ages of climbers. You know, there's a lot of old climbers around now, a lot of young climbers. And I just really believe in trying to blur those distinctions, that all these labels that we carry around are so damaging, not just in climbing, just everywhere.
And, true.
So, you know, I think we really need to reach the younger people at this point. Most of the people that are involved, I notice they're kind of older people. Are out there. We've done some pretty incredible cleanup projects in Boulder Canyon, but at the events, they're still kind of a work in progress. The one at the Spot recently was fairly small, you know, given that we had Peter Mortimer there, we had Lynn Hill there, you know, and people, you know, could talk to her. And
pretty good guess.
Yeah, and so the events are, I think, pretty amazing things. Another feature of the events that I think we'll probably continue with is we've always had the conversation, and the first one was a conversation with Justin Shong, and the second one was a conversation with Lynn Hill. And so it's just to sit down with one of these people in our community that are pretty famous people. We have incredible people in this community, and just a 20 or 30 minute talk. It's, so far it's been me talking with them, but I'm hoping to expand that to maybe some other people interviewing someone that they know. And so really, given the sort of the quality that we've offered and that it's free and there's free beer, you know, the turnouts really have been kind of small, you know, 50 or 70 people. And we're not looking to have it be huge either. So, but we'll see where it goes.
And from what I could glean online, there's no president, there's no chairman, there's no board of directors. Who the heck sets all this stuff up then? Right.
Very good point. There's very little.
Sounds like you.
At the moment, it's been me doing a lot of the grunt work. I have some.
I think it is him.
I have some really great support. In fact, one of the best things is that the American Alpine Club is really excited about this and kind of the model of these grassroots local groups forming and how can they be a part of that. So really we're kind of under the wing of the American Alpine Club. And as we speak, there's a website that we're building that really the American Alpine Club has offered all of their resources, the hosting, their IT guy. There's just an amazing collection of talent that's assembled with graphics artists and programmers and marketing people, and so that'll be up, I hope, maybe in a month. That'll be boulderclimbingcommunity.net. Pretty easy to remember that. Right now, you can go to that, boulderclimbingcommunity.net, and there's a placeholder page, and there's a subscribe link on it, and that's the best way to get on the mailing list. So, but I think when that website is up and running, the idea is for that to be one place where people can go if they want to know anything. If you want to know about closures, raptor closures, if you want to know about events coming up, anything at all, you go there. And we're also trying to link to the other sites like Mountain Project and Flatirons Climbing Council. But if you know, you can get there from our site. That again, we're sort of trying to be the glue, the connective glue that supports everything. And you know, it's we're trying to be collaborative and inclusive and connective and supportive, all these kind of things. And, you know, I think that's the new way for humanity, basically.
Hopefully.
That's, you know, that's what it's about. Rather than all these, you know, the last 5,000 years has all been all about factions and us and them and win-lose and power and all this stuff. So this is an attempt to bring us all together.
Right on.
That's interesting. So that was Roger Briggs talking about the boulderclimbingcommunity.net, new website, new group, new concept. And if people want to sign up, they can go to that website and they'll be on the mailing list?
They'll get on the email list, and every week or two there's a mailing that keeps you on top of what's going on and until the website gets up and running. That's the best way to find out.
So you've been listening to Climb Talk on Radio 1190. That was Roger Briggs talking about the boulderclimbingcommunity.net, new website here in Boulder, Colorado. And our earlier guest was Jason Kale, the original, the only crypto child, Pete Takata, world-famous climber, writer, alpinist, and Abby Smith, writer and a great climber. She climbs harder than I do.
She climbs hard.
So, Dave, if you can talk us out, I'll switch it over to Overnight Ambient.
I can, Roger. Thanks again for stopping by. BoulderClimbingCommunity.net. Jump on there. Everybody, thanks for listening. We always appreciate it for sure. It's the only climbing talk show in the nation. Have a happy and safe Halloween.